I'm Cynthia Fernandez, and I met Nancy Mellon in the bookstore that my husband Paul and I have located in Carmel, California. And I was really taken with the unique knowledge and wisdom that I saw in Nancy when we met. I invited her to be a guest on my radio show, Simple Life Radio. It's a weekly program, and it's recorded and aired locally in Sand City, California, focused on life experiences and perspectives of the folks on the Central Coast of California. Well, during that interview, I was struck with the depth and value of this work and the profound results that have also that have actually been recorded, more importantly, those that are possible. And so, in my opinion, this is a technique that once it's learned, it's easily transportable. It's adaptable to any situation, person, need, or problem. And I decided I wanted to be of whatever support I could to assist Nancy in sharing this work worldwide. So we talked and came up with the idea of podcasts. And this particular podcast will serve as an introduction to the work in general, and hopefully will create a foundation to support the further detail following in subsequent podcasts. Nancy was a high school teacher, later a Waldorf teacher through the arts, and in her 50s began to study psychotherapy and yoga as support for the healing process. She's authored 4 books over the past 20-plus years. She's a psychotherapist, counselor, and she teaches the healing art of storytelling, again, all around the world. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, you're called a storyteller, but I think that you define the word storyteller differently than just retelling a story in a very entertaining way. Is that right?
Well, we are all human beings are storytellers. From the time we're little, doing our best to get some words out about what we're experiencing, to our finale, where we're also trying to, you know, express a little bit about the wonder of the journey beyond this life. So, we're all storytellers, and yet there are many professional storytellers. Thank heavens there are more and more professional storytellers who are dedicated to this art in the world now, because it is a wonderful antidote for the electronic communications that are filling our lives right and left and all around. So, when I work with storytelling from the very beginning, because I've always had children at heart and their well-being, young people at heart, as a teacher from the time I began teaching when I was in my very early 20s, I wanted to know, and I realized quite quickly that the quality of the poem, the content of the story, the quality of the language was having a tremendous effect upon me and also upon the young people I was teaching, whether they were little ones or whether they were teenagers. So I've taught the whole gamut, and or a graduate student or whatever, because I worked with them as well. And each story carries its own resonant field of awareness, of intention, and every word in the story is a weaving that can affect us right through our whole being. I've been just increasingly fascinated by how storytelling can be an actual healing art and can reach into the vibrational patterns in our souls, in our minds, in our whole physiognomy of soul, body, and waken up our sense of well-being and freedom for life. So this has been a path I've been on now for almost 30 years, and I feel very privileged to be part of this life-producing path that's helping lots and lots of people to wake up again to the warmth, to the medicine that can be hidden in our speaking.
So the different kinds of storytelling, from what you're speaking of, might be perhaps a Hollywood version, or how stories are created into advertisements or even family stories. The differences between what I just listed off compared to healing stories, as you call it, would the difference be intention or how they're used?
I think that's it right there. What is the intention for the story? And when we speak with people and read about storytellers all over the place these days, they can have many, many intentions, you know, to sell a product, to win in politics and so forth. The way that I believe we can work most powerfully as human beings with stories is to allow ourselves to speak from the heart. And the heart is a great teacher for our mind. It's a great teacher for the whole rest of us about the quality of our words and the plot lines that we share and the intention for our stories.
Mm-hmm. So your vision then of the body is that it's a very integrated aspect of mind, emotion, as well as body. Is that right?
It is. We are such astonishing integrated beings, we human beings, and all of us together are vastly integrated, even though we don't like to be too aware of that because we have our own individual lives that we're preoccupied with and, you know, getting from here to there and so forth. But we are all inhabiting, and we are all helping to create one way or another the great human story.
Beautifully put. In your book, Body Eloquence, The Power of Myth and Story to Awaken the Body's Energies, you wrote, and I quote, "Each organ carries out its own function diligently and enjoys its life. Each is a gateway of spiritual activity with its own intelligent mind-soul that is very sensitive to whatever is going on in our lives." Could you expand a little on that?
Well, you know, if we look at the embryo of the child or any young child and realize that they have such an amazing growth trajectory, that every single bit of them is on an adventure to grow and manifest who they are. So the heart, the liver, the lungs, the brain. We get so much attention on the brain these days, but the skin, the whole mysterious, marvelous body, soul of the digestive system, all of that is telling a story, and it's longing for a story to help support for the little ones. And then, of course, as adults, when we get into trouble with one of our organic functions, or a few of them even, sometimes there are particular kinds of stories and speaking those stories which can actually resonate most successfully with the liver, for example, or with the kidneys, or with the skin, with the immune system. So I, in these recent years, I've become more and more aware and fascinated by the different old stories and new stories we can create, the different archetypal plot lines that actually support the healthy functioning of the physical body. And we can speak more about that in the future in more detail, so that I can share what I've learned. And I hope that in the future, the 21st century, that more and more people will be taking interest in how the imaginations that we hold and the wisdom of many of the old plot lines can help us as healing medicine.
Nancy, tell us how your work with yoga played a part in this more integrated understanding of the body as a receptor. Yoga and dance, I understand, were both very key
For this unfolding of this new level of how the stories live within the physical being and are constantly resonating within us. Yes, I've always been interested in the growing process of children as a teacher, the wonder of how children learn and grow before our very eyes sometimes. And and also how I've grown over the years, how I've shifted and grown and amazed myself at developing new capacities or developing new awareness within the old subjects that I thought I knew pretty well, and suddenly I realize, oh, there's a whole new way of looking at this, which, for example, the subject of physiology. So when I was training in psychotherapy through the arts, which I wanted to specialize in, how all the arts can enhance the healing process and the therapeutic encounter. And I was training at Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And during that time, I had a longing, which I'd had actually for many years, to understand how can the healing person, whoever it is, in the arts in some other way, how can we become more aware that when things go off, when the child has intense ADHD, or when they are unable to concentrate in the classroom, or they're particularly suddenly aggressive or depressed or whatever, I wanted to be able to read their body language and to be able to let the pictures arise from within me, which would help me to help them through the stories I would make or the poems that I would write for them in if for the classroom. So that curiosity was there. And then as I went deeper into the study of professional psychotherapy, I became even more interested in this aspect of things. And I found a wonderful and remarkable, unusual teacher of yoga who was very interested in the meridians, Chinese medicine, and who had had a very difficult experience. I was kind of fallen apart through an accident in the city of Boston, and had learned how to put himself back together. He was in the process of learning all the intricacies of feeling like he's back even more so than he was before that accident. And in the process, many people gathered around him to assist and to benefit from all that he had been learning. So I learned yoga in my early 50s as a way of enhancing my study of psychotherapy. And I also had for many years been storytelling in the classroom and sharing poetry with children of all ages and created plays for them and tried to really live into the imagination that would be most beneficial for the children. That is how I began to integrate, began to discover that the whole body and all these meridians, which have been described so exquisitely in the Chinese medical world, how every one of those energy patterns within us can be seen through the eyes of story, whether it's old myths or whether it's stories that are made up on the spot for the firing up of the gallbladder, or to really bring up the excitement and the fire of the intestinal system, or to strengthen the breathing, that all of these different realms within us can be addressed through story. And how exciting that was for me, that I could begin to see with new eyes how the stories were actually, could be a, and always had been, you know, a real direct nourishment for physiological well-being, as well as emotional well-being and spiritual well-being and so forth, but mental well-being in every possible way. But to reach right into the physiology of the growing child in the beginning was really very fascinating for me. And then, of course, I got more involved with families and then with adults of different kinds who were struggling with health issues, mental, emotional, physical, which often so often go together. And so I've just, over these years that I've worked as a counselor and a psychotherapist, I have tried to really pay attention to what was before me and to learn to trust my, this this old storyteller that is part of us all as human beings, who carries so much more wisdom than I'm aware of that I carry. But once I tap into this, a part of myself that is also part of every one of us as human beings, then I found that pictures would come to me, awarenesses would be there that could help me to form a little story or poem or play as medicine, you know, as an offering. But to find that part of myself, the storyteller part of myself, that and for all of us to do that can be a bit tricky because we are obviously not using that part of ourselves in our daily lives very widely. Parents of young children maybe are the ones who do that the most. But the storyteller part of us is always there. So over the years, I've learned to help myself and others open to this extraordinary wisdom that is all around us as human beings, that is stored within us in our family lore and in our personal lives, so that we can access this to make a resonant, empathetic connection with a child in distress, with an adult in great distress, with chronic illnesses, with ongoing community distress that has not found a resolution. And so this storyteller part of us is amazingly ingenious. How do we find it? You know, in the American Indian wisdom, the storytellers always address all of the directions, which we easily forget to do when we're using our brains, that we, because we're more oriented toward what's directly in front of us and trying to think it through in a logical way. But the storyteller part of us is round. It is a compass that leads us deep into the earth wisdom and out into all the directions, north, south, east, and west, each one carrying its different vibrations and its different histories, its different messages to us, and also leading above us into the worlds where the stars and the planets and the angelic hosts, if I may say so, can offer us guidance, especially in these puzzling or even emergency situations where a rational mind is really at a loss. Mm. You know, it just can't handle the thing. Mm. And so then the storyteller self can come to our rescue. And over long eons of time, the storyteller has been an important member of all tribes and communities. Someone that one can go to who has the ability and has a belief that they can go and out into all these directions to breathe the wider connections. And out of that, to find the imagination, to find the intuitive awareness that can bring help to the situation, real assistance to the situation, whether it's a minor one or a major, major one. So, you know, I usually say when I'm giving workshops, when I'm working with people, well, how can you remind yourself that your rational mind is not always going to be in charge? That it's actually, if you're going to make a great story, your rational mind is not going to be in charge, you know. And I have a little collection, a basket full of instruments, like this bell, which has a lovely clear tone. And I have this xylophone, or I've got a whole little collection of clear-toned instruments that can help to kind of wash the ears and remind our heart that when we're telling a story to be of help, that we're actually going to the heart level of our being, and our mind is going to come along with that. The intellect is not in charge. So the wisdom mind is in charge. Now, the wisdom mind is awesome, to say the least. So when we help ourselves to get in touch with our wisdom mind, then we too can be quite awestruck at the story we hear ourselves telling. when it is dedicated to the well-being of another person or to a whole group of people. And so there are many ways to remind ourselves that we all, each of us, has a much larger mind than our intellectual mind. I just had a message from a woman who said, she lives in South Africa, actually, and she said, you know, she told me some of what she was doing, and she said, I need to be successful with my storytelling. I want to be like the author of the Harry Potter series and have a great success. So her ambition is marvelous, but it's also causing her to punch into her rational mind and think, well, how do I, trying to create strategies to be a success in the great world. But actually, what she said was, really what I want to do is to have a better, closer relationship with my children, you know, and how can I do that? You know, so when she realized, well, if she really just serves her children, maybe that will inspire her to be the next great storyteller in the world, because anyway, she's going to be the greatest storyteller in the world for her children, because that's guaranteed, because all children think their personal storyteller is the world's greatest storyteller. It's a very arrangement, you know. They start getting critical. Because we are so critical, they start getting critical. Mm. Rather than loving the process of the story. Because when we're really there with our heart that is working to create the story that is a contribution to the well-being of the other, of whatever age, when our heart is really listening to them with empathy, then as we are telling the story, they're helping us to make the story, which is so different than trying to nut it out in our own brilliant little mind. Because then it becomes a wonderful heart collaboration, which, of course, the intellect gets, you know, loves to get involved with that and do all kinds of wonderful, clever things. But sometimes that also distracts us from what the story really would be if we stayed in the stream of empathy. Over the years that I've worked with storytelling, that's where I've tried to work from, is from the heart place. And to have that be where I go first before I'm going to tell a story.
As I listen to you, Nancy, I'm reminded of the naturalist studies that my husband Paul and I are students of. We actually have a local group, Monterey Bay Trekking Club, that meets once a month. And we go out on the landscape and we look for animal tracks. And really what happens is that our senses open up. Right? And there's a big difference between observing something merely to label it versus observing something while holding curiosity open and then following whatever the clues are to a more expansive understanding. And as I'm listening to you speak about storytelling as you understand it and as you use it in your work, it seems to me that you really operate with the latter, being very open and expansive.
Oh, it's wonderful what you and Paul are doing out there on the land, and I want to join you sometime.
Yes.
Yeah. Once we say, oh, that's a squirrel, and we label it squirrel, then there's something that dies within us, you know, something that goes under a shadow, because the label, it can be helpful. Well, that's not a bear, it's a squirrel. But on the other hand, it has bear-like qualities. Oh, really? Oh, well, what is the connection between a squirrel, a tree, and a bear? And then the creative part of the mind can start working on connections which, once we're under the glue of the label, we wouldn't ever think of. So this open curiosity is what creates the play of the imagination, mm-hmm. or the freedom to play and to seek connections. Because I've worked therapeutically with people for many years, I so often had this experience where someone will come with their whole story of their suffering,
mm.
I always say, well, when we work together, we're going to look for a creative project that you can be doing, because healing is always creative.
Very true.
And would you agree? You know, and say, well, I suppose. I mean, I suppose, because everything changes in some ways when you're healed, from being a sore to, or a scar or whatever, to something different. And so I remember the woman who had such a big, difficult story to tell, and my attention kept being drawn to the legs of the table where we were sitting, and I thought, this is really strange. This has never happened before. So I, after a little while, because I was feeling the wood and the shape of the legs on the table, I said, you know, I'm having a strange experience. I said, my attention keeps being drawn to these beautiful legs and under this table. Can you explain that to me? And then she said, oh my goodness. And her story completely began to change. She said, well, for all these years, I've been wanting to create a studio, a furniture making studio, where I could create beautiful furniture. And I just haven't done it. And I know what I would do, but I just haven't done it. And I said, that's interesting. Well, why haven't you done it? She said, oh, well, you know, and she started trying to make explanations. And I said, well, if we're going to work together, you know, as we work together, how about seeing if you could begin making the furniture studio that you really want? She just lit up. And then she started making plans right there on the spot. And when she got home, quite soon, she had called the very fine furniture makers league in her area, and she had made an appointment to go and speak with them and to sign up. And then she started making plans for transforming their family barn into her furniture making studio. And lo and behold, by the next year, she would come over from time to time and bring along the beautiful joining work she'd learned to do for making drawers and the cabinet making skills that she was making. And 3 years later, when I met her, and she was just had fired through her family story, created much better boundaries for herself, and was feeling much, much healthier and happier in herself, she said, I just want to come over and show you my latest creation. And she had created this unique stool, which was going to be in a big show because it was just absolutely exquisite and unique. And she was just as proud of it as she could be of anything that she had done, because she had fulfilled that creative need. So why am I telling this story? Because the images that can come to us can surprise us. And whether we're telling, we want to bring a story to a four-year-old, or to our old mother, or to a spouse at a difficult time in his life or her life, that we have within us, without fail, and you just have to believe me, you folks out there, we human beings have within us the capacity to create the most amazingly wonderful and healing stories for the circumstances that surround us.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's true. We all use storytelling in our practical lives, and maybe we don't realize it, you know. I actually use it in the bookstore, and when I'm meeting with someone, a customer, a potential customer, I might tell them about the craftsperson or artist that made something that we have for sale, or the origin of something that we have in the store. And by sharing with them what I'll call the backstory of this particular item, it really creates a connection, and that allows a relationship to begin. That changes the quality of experience. When it's different than a fact sheet or an operator's manual, when someone actually tells you about the humans, where they live and how they live and what their motivation is for creating this, it totally changes your quality of relating to the item.
It's getting in touch with the real creative history of the item, whether it's, you know, the book or the beautiful statuary or the the lovely plants that you have in your secret garden behind the bookstore. What a wonderful, magical bookstore you and Paul have created there. But no, tracking the back into the creation of anything is absolutely awesomely fascinating. And once we get in touch with that process of, oh, how was this made? Or what is the real ancestry that is living in this thing that I'm doing right now? There's a marvelous story of the young bride at Thanksgiving in America who has gone out and bought a big turkey. And she tells her husband, she says, well, can you help me just cut off this part of the turkey? The top part has to go. And he says, why? And she says, well, that's the way we've always done it in our family. We always sort of cut one third or so off the top of the turkey, and then we do that on the side. He said, that's strange. I've never seen anybody do that before. She says, well, I'm going to call my mother. So she called her mother, and her mother said, call your grandmother. She'll tell you all about it. So she called her grandmother, and her grandmother said, well, my dear, when I was first cooking my turkeys, in fact, all those years that I was cooking turkeys, and the family came to our house, Grandpa's house, and we always had to do that because we had such a small oven. So when those stories, our behavior, our amazing behavior, when we can trace it back and make a story out of it that's a good story to tell, that brings it out in the light, so much of us can become happier. We become lighter because we're not carrying that strange thing in the dark. I mean, yesterday working with a woman who comes from a long line of women who have been intensely resentful and critical of the men in their lives. Mm. And that's a hard act to carry into a marriage which really doesn't call for that. But she finds herself repeating that behavior and not. We're in the process of creating this into a somewhat humorous story about the mother who, and the grandmother before her, and the grandmother before her, have created such a pecking order on the men around them. And as she's looking at that in herself, she's realizing, oh, I really can free myself up from this more. I don't want to be repeating this story. So the story repetitions that go on in our lives can sometimes be very helpful to us, but they're often not. Mm. You know, often enough they're not, and they can be looked at, and they can be tracked back, and we can sniff at them, you know, and we can sort of study the tracks and not know what they mean for a while, and then start realizing, oh, there's a creature kind of shaped like this, mm-hmm. who's creating that path of tracks there, that anger path or that rage path that sometimes lives in families. And we can track that back and we can look at it more clearly. We can look at it, as you say, with curiosity, with warm curiosity, and say, whoa, is that a monster? What is that? If I were looking at that through the eyes of a beetle, those could look like very huge paw marks that would be very threatening to me. If I look at those from the point of view of a masterful scientist who knows all about squirrel tracks, then, well, that's just squirrel track, you know? Well, that's just rage track in the family, you know? Mm. Let's see what we can do to get more familiar with that and try to walk around it more.
pay more attention to
it. Yes, and not put a label on it that makes us feel like we can't be friends with that squirrel in some way, that we can't reach out to those tracks with our heart and our curiosity, our warm curiosity, rather than just a cold clinical curiosity.
That's a really good point, Nancy. That speaks to me of self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always much easier to address something that isn't running away from you. In the future, then, you are going to be having podcasts that really go into each different organ of the body and how they relate or resonate with stories and speak to how that can be used in a really creative way.
Yeah, considering that all healing really is creative, and that if we can have more confidence in the story creation process that we're all involved with one way or another, we're creating a terrible story for ourselves, or we're creating a sort of bland repetitions of a story in our lives, but we also are capable of tuning ourselves right to the astonishing creative realities that live within us, that are planted right within us. They've been there from this marvelous orchestral garden that is thriving within us as human beings, or we wouldn't be here, to tap into that more and to try to see how different kinds of stories, their rhythms, their plot lines, their characters, their plot resolutions, how they actually are pictures of these marvelous organic activities that are going on within us at all times. To be able to tune to those more on the imaginative level seems to me very worthwhile.
I think that's true, and it's really exciting because it seems like you're actually involved in pioneer work in this arena. You know, quantum physicists have for the last maybe 15, 20 years talked about how all things are connected, and it seems as though you're taking this on a similar journey.
The whole body is a resonant network. It is truly a sublime orchestra. If we could hear it, we probably wouldn't want to listen to anything else because we'd be so astounded at the music that is sounding within us. And so I believe that during this 21st century, we are called to reawaken to our bodies in every possible respectful way. If we're going to stay here on this earth as human beings and learn to live more harmoniously with one another, the body is a teacher, because here we all are, and our bodies for the most part are getting along very well in there. And of course they get their little glitches, and sometimes something major turns up as well, but for the most part the human body is actually a teacher for community harmony. And so what can we learn from the way these organs are and how they tune with one another, how they respond to one another, how they've learned to live together so closely? It's astonishing that they are so wrapped into this apartment building that we are, as walking apartment building, well, a lot more than that, but that they're so closely living chock-a-block over one another and have a fine good time every day. So I'm interested in, and have been for quite a number of years, how we can learn to listen more fully into the music of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear its stories, to hear its questions, to hear its wonderful life stories, and to help support them through our own speaking, and to learn that when things do go a little awry or very awry within us and between us as human beings, amongst us as human beings, that we can, through story and through the power of our wisdom mind, which is wrapped very closely with our whole body, every single part of our body, wrapped into the wisdom mind, we can find ways to communicate directly with liver, with kidneys, with gallbladder, with spleen, with the brain, with the larynx, the thymus gland, with our whole, the intricacies of our immune system, we can find ways to communicate directly through image, through story, and through plotline.
Mm. For those of you listening, if you'd like to know more about Nancy Mellon's work, her website is healingstory.com. You will be able to reach her on that. And if you'd like to connect with me on some level, our pilgrimsway.com is our website for the bookstore and secret garden. And Simple Life Radio is the radio station that I do once a week. So we'll look forward to having you join us in the future for subsequent podcasts where Nancy actually delves more deeply into detail by the individual organ of the body and how it works.
How it resonates in story, yeah, in characters, in plot lines, in the quality of our voice, in our gestures, and in the unfolding of the story. You are welcome to join this pioneering ship that is out there in the great ocean of life, endeavoring to bring more loving wisdom to the human physical being at this time, so that we can get a little bit beyond the labels, as you say, the diagnostic labels that can take us away from the sense of loving wonder and curiosity.
Wonderful. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.